This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You put just flour all over his symbols. So the first note he hit, it just went everywhere, all over. And honestly, and that's the thing. We tried, but he never really forgave us.
Welcome to the Humorology Podcast with me, Paul Burros, and my glittering lineup of guests from the worlds of business, sport, music and entertainment, who are here to share their wisdom and their use of humour with you. Humorology is the study of how humour can dramatically improve every aspect of your business and your life. Humorology puts the fun into business fundamentals, increases the value of your laughing stock, and puts a punchline back into your bottom line. Please remember to like, subscribe and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. My guest on this edition of the Humorology Podcast is an award-winning songwriter, musician and founding member of the pop rock band The Kooks, where he performs lead vocals and plays guitar. Their debut album, Inside In, Inside Out, has gone platinum 5 times over, with hits such as Naive, Oola, and She Moves in Her Own Way. The Kooks have produced 5 more studio albums, gaining much critical and commercial success. Their newest album, 10 Tracks to Echo in the Dark, was released this past summer. When he isn't making music with the Kooks, you can find him performing with his wife Ellie Rose. The pair began releasing cozy and punchy pop music during the pandemic under the name Duo. Taking a brief break from his European tour with the Kooks, we caught up with Luke in his hotel room in Barcelona. Luke Pritchard, welcome to the Humorology Podcast.
Oh, hello, Paul. Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure. We've had a couple of rockers, Mark Bedford from Madness and other people from the music business, but we've never had a lead singer before, so it's lovely. Wow.
I'm honoured. Yeah, well, I mean, it's great. It's interesting because, you know, humour does play such a role in music, so I'm quite excited to open it all up. And certainly for me, it's always I've always loved artists that put a bit of humour in their music. So, yeah, great to chat about it.
Well, Madness were one of those artists, weren't they, who amazing stuff with their videos. Mark Bedford told us a lot about that. Now, you grew up in West Sussex, and the Jesuits say, give me a child of 7 and I will give you the man. What was the young Luke Pritchard like?
Well, you know what? I was like the smallest kid for my childhood. I was always I was always a little bit scrappy, a little bit shy, and certainly wasn't the guy with all the jokes. You know, that wasn't me. I think that's why I kind of got into music in a way. You know, it's like a good place to be when you're that kind of kid. And, you know, I wasn't into sport, you know, I was rubbish at that. I was the kind of kid at the back, you know, with my guitar in the shade, basically. But I was a good kid, you know, I was all right, I think.
That's interesting, because many musicians and comedians are intrinsically shy. I mean, I work with comedians all over the world. I've worked with tons of musicians, and intrinsically shy. And there's a saying that performance is the shy person's revenge on the world. Do you think that's true?
I like that. Yeah, I do think that's kind of true. I think it's a kind of strangeness about life, the kind of absurdity of being a human, isn't it? That you actually find you're most comfortable in front of loads of people on a stage, and whereas, like, you know, in like a group of people talking, you're not. It's a bizarre thing. I think, yeah, you do find some kind of solace almost in that. And I mean, I think there's a funny relation there, and it seems to be a bit of a pattern, doesn't it? And I think it helps you. You know, I'd say, like, it for me, for sure. Like, I found that, like, helped me find my feet by performing, and then being able to maybe, you know, get a bit better at those things in the other aspects of my life. So it's kind of medicine, really.
Oh, I'm interested in the idea of it being medicine, and humor as medicine, music as medicine, those things. Does it just give you a place in the world? And when you were young, did you feel that, you know, you needed to find something to actually, well, I don't know if the show off gene was there, because I think, but you know what I mean, that, you know, yeah. I think I have it as well. But it's there, but you need to find a way into it. Was that like it for
yeah.
you?
Yeah, for sure. I think I always was a bit performative, but in a way it's like I was just comfortable to be silly. And I think that's part of being a front man as well, is like, you know, the front men that I look up to, I'm more looking at, you know, the kind of Jaggers and this way. It is like it's silly, you know, and I was always comfortable to do that and put myself in that position. I don't know why, but that was just me. I think a lot of people, especially like when I was at music college and stuff, people wanted to take it quite seriously, and I think that served me quite well in the Kooks, because I'm quite happy to be a bit silly and to be quite lighthearted with it, really, you know. And I love, you know, like Ray Davies and the Kinks and the silliness, you know, and McCartney, and that was always what I looked up to, really, was like being quite deep emotionally, but also being able to be silly as well with that whole expression. And I don't know how, I just found it appealing. I think it was quite, gave me a bit of freedom, really. And like I said, I think I made a bit of a decision early on when I was a teenager that I was just, I'm just like, I'm not going to care what people think when I'm on that stage. Maybe I do too much of it, but and then you find people love that. Do you know what I mean? And then all of a sudden you're like, you think you're being silly, and everyone's like, wow, you're like quite cool.
I love this link between silly and cool, because, I mean, why are we so drawn to people who make us laugh? You know, to people who can be silly. And is that, are you acting it out for other people? And they think that, but we are intrinsically, you talked about Jagger being silly. And I think you're right. I think there's a lack of care, and there's you're sort of the ability to laugh at yourself as well. Do you think that's
important?
Well,
it's also quite sexy.
Yes.
You know, it is in a weird way. I think it's about inhibitions when you think about it as a performer. I think there's in music, if we take music, I'm sure it's exactly the same in the business world and stuff, but I've got much experience in that. But with music, you could almost put people into two categories. I think I remember in Chronicles, Bob Dylan, he talked about this. You have like the performers that are almost behind the curtain, and then the performers that are in front of it, and you don't really necessarily get to choose. But as a performer, I've always been like, you know, people are coming, they're paying their money to have a good night, to like forget their worries, forget themselves. They want a bit of silliness and a bit of a bit of a lightheartedness with it, as well as having subtext and meaning behind your words and stuff like that. And but yeah, I think like I say, for me, I naturally was drawn to that side of things. That's what I liked doing myself when I went to gigs.
Well, that's really interesting, because from a psychological perspective, there's a saying that if you want anyone to go into any state, you have to go into that state first. So what you're saying is that you're calling it silliness. I call it sort of somewhere between silliness and charisma. But that ability to go into that state, everybody's going, oh, I love that he can go there, and it makes it easier for me to go there. And you just mentioned, you know, people like Jagger. Now, you are talking as a performer, and we kind of understand that thing, and you're saying it's silly. But most people are looking at Jagger and going, it's sexy, it's, you know, confident, it's charismatic. But I think you're right, and I think you've really hit on something, that this silliness and the able to send yourself up
it's the circus, you know. And it's like, you see, he's wiggling his butt, and he's going into, you know, you see the footage of him going into the fancy dress you know, boxes they've got behind, and he's like, you know, it's fun, and it makes you, it has all those other things, the cool and the sexiness, but fundamentally, it makes everyone at the show just, like, lose themselves and, like, get a bit loose, and a lot of people struggle to get loose in life, you know, and it's just about wiggling out of the rigid society that we sometimes live in, I think. That's the job.
Yeah, I love your idea that it's like the circus. It allows ourselves to free ourselves, but you can't be truly free until the person on stage has embodied it for you, essentially.
Yeah, I think so.
You went to the Brit School at one stage, which is, for people that don't know who listen all over the world, is, you know, people like Adele went there, Rizzle Kicks, Jessie J, all that. Was that part of what you learnt there, or was this sense of fun, this sense of circus, this sense of silliness, something that you discovered along the way?
I guess I did learn it there, really. I think it was interesting being surrounded by so many other, like, talented musicians, and I guess I was like, I'm gonna have to find a way to compete with these guys, you know. So I guess in some ways then it became like choosing that path, but yeah, I think I learned a lot from just being around different styles of music there, particularly because I'd really just, my back, you know, what I grew up on would have been just, you know, Everly Brothers and Dylan and you know, all this kind of, and like rock and roll, obviously, and R&B and stuff. And then going to Brit School opened me up to like all kinds of different music. So that was, I'd say, the main thing that I learned there was, like, you know, I play guitar for, you know, Leona Lewis or whatever in the band, and doing like R&B, soul and stuff. And there was, you know, lots of that. And yeah, I saw people who were much more, they'd done a lot more performing than me. I mean, I used to be in a band called Basement Band, because we used to rehearse in a basement. And, you know, our one gig we managed to get was at the bandstand in Clapham Common, because no one would let us play. So we were so bad. But when I got to Brit, it was like I was able to get on stage and see what I could do. But at that point, I wasn't a frontman. My thing was, like, I wanted to write songs for people. So that came maybe a bit later in when I moved to Brighton. But yeah, you know, it was. I think, to answer your question directly, it's like you had to stand out there because there were so many good people. So it's like, then again, that it's like peacocking, isn't it? You have to, like, just jump out a bit and, like, do something, be a bit more of a of the silliness maybe that helps you get noticed even.
Well, you obviously did get noticed because I think you were just 17 years old when the Kooks had their first hit. I mean, did that test your sanity? Did it test your humour? Because it's a big thing, especially when you're young, to get all that adulation, isn't it?
Without going too deep into it, yeah, I think I did lose my humour for a bit. In fact, one of my managers, we've had the same managers for nearly 20 years now. And, one of the managers said that to me. I think on the third album, he was like, "It's great to see you finally got your humour back," because like I did go, but I think it was pretty challenging. It was quite a different climate then as well. I found fame quite difficult because it you don't realise how priceless anonymity is until you don't have it, and stuff just like it was just like in Brighton, quite a small city, everyone would come up to you. I had to get security, which is not fun. I mean, it sounds like all cool and everything, but like it's not cool, you know, because I had a lot of people just come up and all this kind of bollocks. So I did, it was quite hard being that young, but I wouldn't change it. You know, I think in the end of the day, we all dealt with it and kind of got through it. And there were some unbelievably cool times as well. But I think I got a bit serious for a bit, you know. I think it was just the funny thing about it is that you start out, do the first Kooks album, and I'm writing lots of like fun songs and having fun with it all and finding it all quite funny. And then, yeah, the second album, I was like, I need to make, you know, I want to make like a serious album, and like, it's got to be really bluesy and like rock, you know, and that's cool and it's a great record. But then I had to work my way back to going, oh, that's not really me, you know. So it's a funny journey you take on these things.
What happens when you have some success? As you know, I've had a tiny touch of being a pop star for a very brief period of time. But
oh, I love what happens?
Oh, bless you, mate. But what happens is, which people don't understand, is that you don't necessarily change, but everybody else changes around you and starts to react very differently to you.
Yeah.
And that at 17 years old must be, you know, for want of a better word, a head fuck.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And I mean, in the context of humour as well, which people are very touchy these days about it. And I think that's dangerous because when, like you say, when you're in that, when you have like the yes men or you're making people money, essentially, people don't want to knock you down. They don't want to give you a jab. And then when you don't have that for quite a long time, that has an impact, and you're so used to it, like your mates should be like roasting you. That's how it should be, you know. It's like not, like life's about always trying to knock the ego out, right? It should be to try, you know. It's one of the sort of spiritual laws, you know. We need to always try and knock that. But when you have, yeah, when you're in a situation that happens to exactly, I'm sure you have a very similar experience where. On, it's not just fame, it's loads of versions of that, you know, becoming successful in any way. All of a sudden, people aren't giving you those humorous knocks that should be there.
And it's difficult to get people around you who will do that. Do you think that's why, I mean, in terms of, it's quite hard to know who to trust. And so you tend to get people from the same business because, you know, I mean, musicians are renowned for being like comedians and essentially, again, for want of a better term, taking the piss, you know. And when there's very, so you tend to mix with people who don't put you on a pedestal. And so, therefore, can deal with you in a humorous way.
Yeah, yeah, I think 100%. And if you don't, then you know, then you can get in some issues. But I think you're right. I mean, that's the camaraderie of like when you hang out with other groups and stuff. That's that because you're all in the same boat, and then you can do that. So, yeah, I think that is probably true. People,
I've never told this story before, but I think it exemplifies what, and you will understand this, when you're in a band and you're taken all over and you're driven to television studios and then you sit in a green room for 9 hours while they fix the lights and everything. And that's when the camaraderie of the band get to or back to at a festival or something. And I remember being in a green room of we were doing a TV show with Morris Minor and the Majors and for our first hit, I think, for Start a Rap. And we'd got to know Wet 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 very well, who people know, and the Stranglers, and we're all in green rooms, and that we're in there with the very talented and brilliant Terence Trent D'Arby. I don't know if you remember, who,
amazing voice.
Who, amazing voice, amazing writer, beautiful looking, unbelievable, but was taking himself at that time a little bit too seriously. And what happened is, because he was in that mode of like, you know, I'm a serious artist, all the Wet Wet, Us, Stranglers, everybody were essentially taking the piss out of him because he couldn't take the piss out of himself. And so we, you know, and we'd start to realise that, you know, he was going, my name's Terence, and we'd all call him Terry or Tell. And he just used to get more and more wound up about this
which
fact.
Is more funny. He just keeps going.
Well, you know what musos are like. They're going to just pile in at that point. And so what do you feel of that? I mean, if you can't take the piss out of yourself, what happens? Do you think you get, you lose it, essentially?
I think a lot of people, that does happen, and they never get out of it, to be honest. But I think you end up quite miserable, to be fair.
By the way, I think it's partly because you're so bored. Because everybody thinks that you're in Barcelona, a hotel room in Barcelona now. And
I'm bored.
Sure. well, obviously, you're chatting to me, Luke. You're going to be very bored. But you're in there, and everybody will go, oh, it must be amazing. But most of the time, the reason you need a sense of humour is because probably 22 hours out of the day, it's incredibly boring. And somebody drives you to the hotel, you sit in the room waiting for the limo, to paraphrase Spinal Tap, you know, and
that's the classic thing. Well, that's the classic thing. I can't remember exactly, but there's a good Charlie Watts phrase, isn't there, or quote, where he says, like, it's like basically you're paid for hanging around. I mean, it's like, it's kind of crazy because, you know, especially festivals, you know, you're doing like a 50-minute set and you've taken like 3 planes and, you know, driven for 5 hours and, you know, so you have to come up with stuff to do. You know, we got like Hugh in our band, who is like, you know, we have a brotherly kind of relationship, but he's been in the band since the beginning, and with me, and you know, he's good at that. He's a very funny guy. He does bizarre stuff. I mean, really weird. It gets weird. Like, just performed it, but he could have his own sitcom, to be honest. So you kind of need like one person like that, the kind of who kind of keeps some kind of, I don't know, silliness again going, and it does help. It does help.
Is Hugh like the band Jester? Is it like the King's Court?
I almost would say I mean, he does. Yeah, it's a lot of that kind of thing. I could see him juggling for sure. You know, he'll just do whole sort of skits for us. So yeah, I guess he is. Yeah. It's great. I love it. It's brilliant. I wouldn't have it any other way.
It's interesting because one of the things about being on the road with a band, having done it, is I think one of the most stressful things I've ever done in my life. So having releases like that, that you're talking about, your relationship with Hugh and you bantering and everything, is a sense of humour vital to a band actually functioning and staying on the road?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it's possible not, but I think it's quite sad. I mean, I've seen, I wouldn't mention names, but I mean, I've seen a lot of bands where they don't talk to each other. They have, sometimes they even have separate hotels. And I think by that point you can function, but it's not the same. And I think that's the kind of goal. I think it, in a way, like, that's how you keep maybe it relevant for yourself, because you have to, it gets to a point after you've toured for so long, you can't just do it just to make money. You know, you want, you still want to feel like you've got a connection with the people you play music with. And I think, yes, I think humor, like, massively helps with that. And I think, like I said before, just like everyone being able to, or afforded to like make jabs at each other is very important. But that's, that bands, you know, it can get, I mean, it can get pretty weird, but it's like family, you know, it's like stuff happens, people do things, things get taken the wrong way, and you can have bad blood quite quickly. And I, with us, we try to be as transparent with all that as we can, because we've had all that, but you just try and keep it, or you know, just kick them out of the band, which has happened as well.
Yeah. Well, but isn't one of the things of a well-functioning band that you all have to, you talked about Jagger and the Rolling Stones, when they were looking for a new guitarist, they looked for somebody who would fit in and be fun, because they'd been through a couple that hadn't, and now,
you know. Apparently, great guitar player.
Well, and who's Mick Taylor, who's is a genius guitar player, but he just didn't but, yeah, fit in to the thing. So it's more important that you all get on, isn't it? And
it's
you
so
find
it's so important. It's and in the studio as well. You know, it's the same in the studio, because you're going to spend time, you're going to have creative decisions to make, and you need to have that kind of relationship. Yeah, I mean it's the holy grail. It's what people are looking for, and there's a few bands that have maintained it. I think, you know, I always took the kind of hard line on it, where I think some people don't, you know, like when it's not working, you it's so, you know, like the Stones, you know, you can carry on, but refresh the lineup. And some people find that hard, especially certain people, fans, you know, find it hard. But and a lot of that, a few times that's been very mutual, by the way. But we've probably had more members than the Rolling Stones, I would imagine. But it keeps it fresh sometimes, and it does take time to find. It's like you don't exactly know how it's gonna play out until you are in those situations as well. You can meet in the pub and it's like you get on great, and then once you're in a venue with no hot water, and it's like and it's like that kind of thing, and then some people struggle with that, and so you have, it takes time to work that out.
The stress of the road is extraordinary, because and I know that everybody, you know, we get many listeners all over the world, and they're going to go, yeah, stress, you have to, you know, it's like the Dire Straits song, you know, money for nothing, you know, get a blister on your little finger. But actually the stress of is the traveling, the expectation, the having to, you know, no performer really cancels shows apart from if they've broken their back or something, because the old showbiz, the show must go on. So in order to keep that lightness and laughter, do you think you have to, you're a leader essentially, do you think you have to lead with laughter, and does that improve everything for the whole crew and the band?
I actually would argue that, like, different people in the band take that role at different times, because you're always going to have a time where you just don't want to get up there, you know, if you're having a bad time or you're knackered or, you know, someone's passed away or you've broken up or something like that. And you have to, and that is part of the job. And I think people, yes, of course, I mean, I find it amazing. I love touring, but it is like, it's not, you'll work, some days you're working for like 25 hours. I mean, like, and in the studio as well, sometimes you're like, so it's actually, sometimes it is even much, much more full on than probably most jobs. But, you know, it's a give and take. It's still great fun. And it's like anything in life. It's how you, it's what you make of it. You can, I've had periods, and this is what I was saying about when I got a bit serious. All of a sudden you get a bit serious and then it's all like really stressful. But if your outlook is gratitude and like, this is really fun and there's not, you know, there's not hopefully a really bad situation back at home or anything, then it should be amazing. But it's knackering. And like, you know, and like having like just little things like having a cold becomes a really big deal. So you have a cold, you know, if you're like doing a normal job, you just take a bit of Lemsip and you get on with it. But if you've got to do a 12-hour flight and then you've got to go straight to a festival, do 5 interviews and then go on stage, that's a real pain in the ass when you've got a cold, you know, and it's, then you become a bit like a baby. You're a bit like, oh my God, like it's so hard for me. Life is so hard. And you, all you got is a fucking cold, you know, but it's like, it scales up to this huge issue for you.
Well, yeah. And you can't phone in sick, can you?
And you can, you know? Like you say, I mean, the show must go on. This is, that's,
well, that's right. Yeah, I'm going to call up 20,000 people and go, I've got a bit of a cold. Do you mind if I don't, you know,
People are very unforgiving. I mean, I had it with when our son was born. It was a bit of a touch and go situation, and I'm sure you know the story. But like, I ended up having to watch the birth on FaceTime. But it was a very like, it was a pretty life and death situation at the time, and I had to cancel the festival. And I mean, I people just don't get it. They you know. Eventually they do, but the fans are like, oh, whatever, just go the next day. And you're like, what? Like, there's something funny about music like that. People think, yeah, like you say, it's like you've got an easy life, so why not? And it is true to a degree, but hey, we're humans, you know what I mean? It's like sometimes, well, there are things that trump the show.
Yes, I think the birth of a child should trump any show. Well, you now have a child. You have the lovely Julian. Has he taught you anything about humour? And do you think you need a sense of humour to raise a child?
Yeah, definitely like toilet humour. he has. I mean, it's a purity, isn't it? It's like a...
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard. But thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
What's amazing to me is the stuff that must be passed down genetically to be a human, the stuff that they just know. How, you know what I mean? It's not all just copying. I find that really interesting. And humor, he's a very, I think already he seems like a very humorous person. I think he messes around with us, you know. And that
manipulates
and that is
you.
Cool. Well, yeah, definitely. I know that's
what they do, by the way. That's the most amazing thing, is that journey where you realize, yeah, you know, the whole crying for no reason just to get your attention.
Have you ever tried this one? This is quite funny. If you some people might not find this funny, by the way, but I think it's fucking hilarious. if you have a kid, right, if you have a baby and you just hit the side, like hit a door next to him or her, they'll start crying, like as if they like knocked their head. It's so funny. And you're like, nothing's happened.
Do you know that babies are only born with two fears? Fear of falling and fear of loud noises. So it may also be something to do with that. But do you know, did you do the thing that when you got back and you first have a baby, you put your finger into their hand and they hold your finger? Do you know that? And you go into that extraordinary place of, oh my God, it's pure love and everything. And actually, it's just biological that many people are born, you know, when there are floods and things. So babies are biologically programmed to hold on to anything. So as soon as they're born, they hold on. But of course, us... Oh, I mean, it is completely wild. But we being humans always go, no, it's because they really love me. You know?
So true.
Well, I mean, Julian's only just over a year old now, isn't he? So, but he's already laughing, isn't he? And he's already giggling and laughing. You know that children laugh between 300 and 400 times a day, and adults only laugh on average 17.5 times a day. So what do you think we can learn from children? And I'm very drawn to the fact that that you introduced the thing of silliness on stage. Do you think that's why people are so drawn to that silliness? Because it's childlike.
I think that's really insightful. I'd never really thought about that, but I think you can learn a lot from the innocence and the kind, and maybe even deeper to think like what we're actually meant to be. You know, maybe that's something to think about. Like that we aren't human. You know, modern humans. Maybe we're not actually our behavior patterns have been, you know, kind of skewed quite a lot, because actually the natural way of a baby who has no outside interference is to laugh that many times, which is incredible. So maybe there's something there, and you find it, it's like euphoria. I mean, me and Elle were in the studio quite recently, and there was just one night where we just had, I haven't had like giggles like that for a lot, like it was like half an hour of, we had this joke. It probably wouldn't sound that funny, but it was like we've been working for like 20 hours, you know, and it's like the euphoria that creates is like really palpable or whatever. You really feel it, and it probably helps with everything. Probably helps with your immune system. Probably helps with, you know, your skin. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think that there's something there. And I know there's like laughter therapy and things like that, but it's also like intention, you know, just on a level as a human. If you you see people, everyone has their different ways of communication, but the people that they're big-hearted and they're always making you laugh and laughing, not comedians necessarily, actually, because comedians often aren't like that. They're actually in person not like that at all. But those kind of people who are very, very, you know, they do seem genuinely happy and good and healthy, you know.
But I think you make a brilliant point. You know, that release of laughter and the endorphins it creates is just one of the most intoxicating things that you can get. And it's extraordinary. Do you get that same... I mean, you go on stage and you are adored, which is a lovely thing, and rightly you should be, but...
Don't think everyone agrees with that. But...
Well, no, but is that the drug that is hard to replace? Is that feeling of love that comes back and that euphoria? Because we talked about the euphoria of laughter, but that same thing which happens in an audience, is that a hard drug to replace?
Yeah, it's heavy, and I missed it when we were full. I won't even mention what it was because it's over there. But you know, when you had imposed stop to it, yes, like, I mean, I really did, it was like withdrawal, definitely. And it is a similar feeling to, yeah, that kind of thing, like having a laughing fit in some ways. But I mean, there's multiple layers to it with music, because there's something about live, like, actually, like, you never know what's going to actually happen, and I'm really big fan of, like, mistakes. I love mistakes. I think it's, like, really important, things going slightly wrong and then coming back, and it makes you feel alive, because, you know, excuse the pun, but it's like there's something about live music which is like it will never happen the same again, and you're kind of on this knife edge, especially at, like, it's not even like necessarily the bigger gigs, but just certain gigs where you're feeling like when you're not on the autopilot, because we play so much, sometimes you're just like doing it, and then you get these like magical gigs where you just feel you're like living exactly in the moment, and it's like nothing matters, and that is like meditation or something, or like drugs, or like, you know, it's like time can stop and things like that. Of course the audience, it's a buzz, because it's like when you feel like everyone in the room is in sync, and that doesn't happen very often, when you feel like everyone is like, it's amazing, and that's why, you know, like the old boys are still doing it. They don't need the money. They're, you know what I mean? They don't need another 50 million. But they're like they miss it. It's amazing. And so, you know, the goal is to be a jobbing musician until you literally can't hold a guitar.
And why not? Because if you love it, I agree. I don't understand the retirement. If you've chosen a job that you love, you'll never work another day in your life. But I'm really interested by what you said about being in sync, because I think that's the connection between comedy and music is about rhythm, obviously. But it's also that thing about reaction and being in sync. Mm. And that is just so compelling, isn't it? You have that ability. I mean, I'm sure you've done it on stage when you've said something and everybody's laughed as a thing, and it may have been as a result of a mistake or something which you just owned up to. But that's fantastic feeling. Yeah. And having, I think that's what brings so many comedians and musicians together, is those two things, the rhythm and being in sync. Do you think that's true or right?
I do. I mean, I think sometimes, I mean, the thing is, a performer, it's like, especially when, I guess it's very similar with stand-up comedies, you've got to judge the room at the time. And it's not that I would like change the set, but you change your, because you've got to break the ice essentially. that's the key. And sometimes it's already broken for you if you go out and everyone's just like drunk and like up for it, or they're just really excited. But sometimes you have to really work for it. And I, like I say, I've seen stand up, you know, it's like sometimes it's like quite flat, and you just have to find that moment of something. And literally, for me, it could be like a bum wiggle, or it can be like talking to someone in the audience or whatever, or cracking a joke. Or like you say, sometimes, like if you mess up a song, you stop and you go, I fucked it up, guys, we're starting again. And it's like all of a sudden, and you're kind of like, oh, I'm meant to be a pro. And then everyone loves it. And they, you know, and it's weird. And I think that's the looseness again, you know, and it's what makes it fun again.
What I love about that is because the whole Humorology project is I always say it's not about comedy or anything. I think it's about humanity. It's about humility as well as good humour. And the fact that I love the idea that you can go, do you know what? The mistakes are where the beauty happens. But you've just described that when you make a mistake and, you know, the band all start in F and you're in G.
It's happened.
Of course.
Literally.
Yeah. And then you just hold your hands up. That's the beauty of the humanity coming out. And everybody can relate to that. And that's, I think, where
it's
it happens.
Great. I mean, I saw when we were supporting the Stones, like, you know, Keith on one of the shows, like the first song, Start Me Up, and he played a semitone up of the riff, right? And then he comes down with the band, and they're all like they're all like laughing, you know what I mean? And you're like, it's great, it's brilliant, and he's fucking Keith Richards. It's like great, you know. I mean, you don't get that a lot of the time these days. The amount of times you like do something that is wrong, and then you listen back and you're like, that's actually really interesting and really cool. And then you kind of develop that idea.
I'm really interested in happy accidents because I think that humour aids creativity. And I don't know how you feel like that. But in order to have happy accidents, you have to be happy, don't you?
I guess that's true. Because otherwise you wouldn't let it fly, would you? You'd just be anal.
and isn't that... Well, that... But I think that a lot of reasons that people don't succeed, and obviously that's what we talk about in Humorology, is because people are too uptight to be properly creative. And maybe you can just talk about, because you've written some fantastic songs and you're a great performer as well. But those happy accidents and your creativity, what is the attitude that you have to allow that? Because people want to create in all kinds of medium. What do you find is the best way to be in order to be at your most creative?
Firstly, very kind words. I mean, I'd like to think I get to these points, but for me, I think one of the things I've had told, like people have said to me in a funny way, is that like I'm very quick to just be like, that's great. Like I have my opinion quite quick, and I'm just like, do it. You know, don't overthink it. And I think the fear is overthinking, and the fear is a bad thing. So you want, like, I'm a big Dylan fan, you know, and it's like when you read about his early stuff, he would get, you know, he would write these songs and he would just get the musicians. They didn't even know what chords they were playing. Do you know what I mean? And it's like second take, you know, if you listen to like a Rolling Stone or whatever, and you solo all the instruments and they're all mad. Like, I mean, the organ's like wrong, everything's wrong, but together something really magic happens. And I'm not saying that I do that all the time, but sometimes that's really cool, just being very impulsive. And something I've learned with vocals, for example, is just like first takes, second takes, you know. I've been guilty of the other way, and same with any artist. Like Dylan's made lots of polished records, you know, but it's like there's something, it's cool to do that stuff, but sometimes what's important is to, like you say, not think too far in the future even. It's just like doing it, being quite impulsive. And if it doesn't work, who cares?
It's trusting your instincts, isn't it? And going...
It is. It is. But I also, I really... It's very hard to do, but I often just try... You try and think what, like, the people listening to it. You know what I mean? They don't want it. They don't want, like... or I don't want to hear something that seems laboured. Do you know what I mean?
Too perfect. Perfect isn't necessarily attractive, is it? Even in a person, you know, the perfect body, the perfect look, that's not necessarily the most attractive. And I think that's true in music. I think, and in humour, it's you don't want it absolutely perfect. You want it, you know, with a little bit. Well, it has to feel natural, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And with humour, you know, sometimes it has to be close to the line. And I mean, the line is different for everyone, but sometimes with humour, it's got to be close to the line because almost you're like, can you say that? Did he just say that? Did she just say that? You know, that's part of humour, that why it breaks you out of the normal life, because it's the absurdity as well sometimes.
Have you ever sort of crossed the line and gone too far? You don't have to tell us how and when, but I'm presuming you must have done in order to pull yourself back.
Yeah, I definitely have in songwriting. I think I wrote a song called Mrs. Thompson, and the lyrics, I'm not even going to repeat it. I thought they were really funny, but in hindsight, not so funny. And I think it was just a B-side. That's not really my style, in a way. Do you know what I mean? I like don't really crack jokes on the line because I probably would get it wrong.
Well, but on a broader scale, do you think that you can be a good communicator without understanding humour? I mean, because some of your songs have a wonderful lightness and a humorous edge to them, don't they? They're not sort of...
Oh, yeah, I hope so. Yeah.
No. But I mean, I think, you know, I've seen an audience go absolutely mental just hearing the first chords of Seaside, for instance, whereby they know that that's just a lightness and a wonderful atmosphere about it. But can a great communicator be great without humour? I just wonder, because the Beatles understood humour. I think Dylan understood humour.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. He's got some really fun ones.
Well, yeah. I mean, so there's stuff on Blood on the Tracks, which is so cruel that it's humorous. Yeah.
Exactly. Well, it's that Positively 4th Street. Fucking hilarious.
Subterranean Homesick Blues. And actually on Blood on the Tracks, The Idiot Wind.
Idiot Wind. Yeah. Every time you open your mouth. That's so good. Yeah, and it's cool humour, but it's brilliant. I mean, and he does understand, or he does go there. And that's
well, I think that's quite tongue in cheek.
There are people you could name, like maybe like Tom York, who's a genius, but he doesn't really have much humour. But then he's got like weird fishes. Maybe he's quite a strange, like he's quite abstract and weird. But so I guess you can think of a few people who communicate without putting too much humour in their music, but. I think it definitely helps a lot, and I think the best, particularly in the 60s, people were very good at it, and I miss that a bit. I think people were very good at it in that era of tracing that line of it's deep but with a real light touch and humour. And I guess in the 70s it got all a bit more serious, but and then the 80s came and it was all fun again.
Well, that's, you know, Morris Minor and the Majors came in the 80s. What can I tell you, you know?
There you go. You're part of it.
It's interesting because when you were talking about the fun in the 60s and everything, I automatically, you already mentioned, thought of the Kinks and that yeah. very, I mean, you know, dedicated follower of fashion and things yeah. like that are just fun, observant, absurd songs about that sort of strange people, which I absolutely love.
And the British Empire, you know, and like just really like in a humorous way making social commentary where it's not really, it's not too heavy, so it's like it makes you think and it puts a mirror up to society, but it's fucking funny. So it's like, you know, it's not doom and gloom.
You've been on stages all over the world and worked some of the hardest audiences at festivals and in clubs and everything. Now, people listening to this, most of them are scared of just standing on stage. What advice would you give to anyone out there who has to get up on stage, even if it's just to make a speech at a leaving do or a wedding? What advice would you give to them?
It's a bit like skydiving. It's like on the way up, it's kind of hard, but then when you jump out, it's all up. I think it's great. I think it's freedom to me. It's freedom. I think people who think it will be quite difficult will be surprised. And it takes time as well. It takes a minute, maybe to be comfortable in there, but. The main thing I'd say is just the attitude has to be like, it. Whatever happens, it's okay. It doesn't, you know, it's not nuclear war, you know, it's like, it's going to be all right. And people got your back. I find it very hard. I don't mind admitting, I find it very hard, like public speaking, which is funny because you're obviously incredible. That's what you do. And you're very comfortable in that situation. But I find that builds up. But then once you're on there and you do it, it's like everyone's like on side. You know what I mean? Everyone wants to laugh and have a good time. So, yeah.
Isn't that just the attitude thing? Because I thought it was very interesting that you're talking about having an attitude of like, they're lovely. All the audience are going to be lovely and they're going to be on your side. So it's about adjusting your attitude beforehand, isn't it?
Yeah, and if they're not, then make them. It's possible. I think adjusting the attitude is the only way, because if you don't do it, it's the kind of thing, it's like if you don't do it and get out there and try at least, like you're not experiencing something really amazing in life, and that's that. You should look at it like that. It's like an experience thing, you know.
Oh, that's interesting. So what do you actually do? What's your thought process before you go on?
It depends, you know, it really depends. Usually I'm just thinking about like the washing I gotta do. Like thinking about people I need to call back, like, no, but I guess I'm lucky because, you know, when I play with the boys, we're all there together. We can just have a laugh. And, you know, obviously you get a bit nervous for it, or you get like the kind of adrenaline pumping when you're backstage ready to go on. But I love it. I find it, it's great. So I'm pacing around a bit, listen to some music loud, and I'll probably have a shot of tequila.
Nice. Well, there's a great bit of advice for everybody. Have a shot of tequila before you go.
It works.
It is. Well, no, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I always say to people that, psychologically speaking, there are two types of people in the world. There are those who get nervous and there are liars, you know?
Yeah.
And but it's true because, you know, you've worked for 20 odd years, have been working the biggest stages in the world and festivals and arenas, and yet you still have that nerve. those nerves.
Oh, yeah.
It's normal. It's how you channel those nerves, isn't it?
Yes, and it never goes away. And it's also to be embraced, really, because that's the fun of it. You know, what's the point? It's like you... Otherwise, you just be robotic on stage. I mean, to be a great performer, you need that adrenaline, that nervousness. It means something, I think. And so, yeah. I mean, I'm not gonna lie. There are occasionally gigs where you just, I don't know, it just doesn't cross your mind. But almost like 99%, yeah, you're there and you're kind of like, okay. Here we go.
Well, you look forward to it, don't you? You look forward because it's that little adrenaline rush is, I mean, it's, if we go back to biological imperatives, it's getting you ready, isn't it? Fight or flight.
Yeah. Fight or flight. Yeah. That's a funny way of looking at it. It kind of is. It's a bit like that. Or going over the trenches, sometimes. Yeah.
Well, it is, but it's how you frame it in your world. We've reached the part of the show, Luke, which we like to call quick fire questions.
Quick fire questions.
Oh, that's where we have the sting, by the way. That's where we have the sting. No, by the way, you can go on for as long as you like. It doesn't matter. We call them quick-fire questions, but some people answer for 10 minutes without each question. So it doesn't have all to right. be. Quick-fire question number one. This is a strange one, and I don't know if you've got an answer for this, but who's the funniest business person that you've met?
Probably my brother-in-law now, just married my sister, Dan French. He's a CEO. No one's quite sure what he does exactly. It's something to do with software. Very successful, very cool guy. And his humor is just filthy. He's brilliant. He's very funny. He makes me laugh a lot. He's a very jovial man. So I'll pick him.
Shout out to Dan French, ladies and gentlemen, the funniest man in business. Now we've got something to live up to, Dan, haven't you? What book makes you laugh, Luke?
There's a book that I've read a few times that it gets quite dark, but the beginning always, like, I'd be in tears of laughter, is The Rum Diary, Hunter S. Thompson.
Oh.
It's very funny. Very funny. So I'll pick that one. Yes, Hunter S. Thompson, Rum Diary.
I must look it up. I have read some Hunter S. Thompson, but not that one. What film makes you laugh, Luke?
Trading Places.
Eddie Murphy.
That one sprung into my mind. I mean, I love that kind of era of comedy and... yeah, that always gets me going.
Are you the only musician in the world who is not going to name Spinal Tap as one of your favourites?
You know what? I love that. I haven't seen it for a long time. And it's actually, we've all been saying we're on tour, we're going to rent a cinema and screen it while we're on tour because everyone's been talking about how long it's been since they've seen it. So yeah, that one is good. It's very, very accurate, which everyone must say. I've literally been trying to find the stage for an hour. It happens.
Just take a little jug to the right when you get to the end.
So good.
Have you had that situation whereby you've probably been the band who have seen the band who's on the way down? And you're the band coming up. You know the scene in Spinal Tap where one band is playing the Enormodome and other band...
Oh, yeah, definitely done that. There's a few. There's the one in... is it in Nottingham? There's the famous venue where it's like there's three venues. It's the one that is actually... I think it's an Ozzy Osbourne... story of where he couldn't find the stage because there's three venues. And yeah, we have experienced that. Yeah, it can be quite awkward sometimes. Yeah.
And then have you turned round afterwards and gone to the lead singer? He's got that much talent. That much talent.
Next time.
Well, let's take a shift to the other side, Luke, because we're going to ask the question, what's not funny?
I mean, for me, it's like, in the right context, I think anything can be funny. And I think that's quite important it's very topical at the moment with comedy, what is all right and what's not all right. But I think I think it's all about, this is something Ellie always says that I think is very wise. It's all about the intention. And it's like, if the intention is good and it's funny, then I think you can go there. So that's my answer. Sorry, it's a bit of a cop out.
No, I don't think it is. And I think I always worry that who's going to be in charge of deciding what's funny? And, you know, does it come down? Because everything comes down to personal taste. And I think Ellie is very wise in saying that, because if your intent is right, you can laugh about anything, you know, because but if you're deliberately punching down to hurt someone,
exactly,
then your intent isn't right.
That's exactly how I see it. So it's a bit up to interpretation, but yes, I really believe that 100%, and that's how it should be, because that's part of humor as well, we've got to use it as a nice, fun way of bringing up big subjects sometimes that are harder to talk about.
Excellent point. It's a good lead in to difficult things. I think that's brilliant. What word makes you laugh?
Gnome. But I don't. Maybe it's because of David Bowie. I don't know. No.
Well, yeah.
Gnome.
I thought of Bowie immediately. Actually, gnome.
Yeah. We had it on the other day. The roses. Yeah. I've always found the silent G to be quite funny.
It is. No. Yeah. Nobody on the Humorology podcast has chosen gnome yet. So gnome is all
excellent.
Yours. And everything. Perfect. Ain't you got no gnome to go to is the gag at the end of the David Bowie thing, isn't it?
So good. Yeah.
What sound makes you laugh?
My kid laughing.
Yeah. I thought that might
make
be
me
it.
Laugh. Oh, I don't, it's... yeah, off the top of my head.
No, yeah. But that's beautiful as well, isn't it? And I don't think there's any purer form of laughter than the laughter of a child, and the way it hits a parent is just...
Yeah, you can't not laugh, right? It's like a it's you don't even think about it, it's just... Yeah.
Oh, it's beautiful. That's beautiful. Would you rather be considered clever or funny, Luke?
That's a difficult question. Can I have both?
You're going to have to pay the extra.
I guess, I don't really think of myself as being that funny, so I think clever.
Okay.
Intellectual. Yeah.
Windswept, intellectual and interesting.
You got it. That's it. That's how I would like to be perceived. Unfortunately, that hasn't happened yet, but maybe one day.
One day. And finally, Luke, desert island gags. You can only take one joke with you to a desert island. What would it be?
Because I'm a musician, I guess it's got to be a drama joke. And the one, how do you know when a drummer's knocking on your door? Speeds up towards the end.
Absolutely.
How's the delivery,
brilliant.
Paul? How's the delivery? Was that all right?
Perfect. And it did speed up towards the end, to be frank. But
yeah. That's it. That's the punchline.
Oh, that's brilliant. And so topical and so musical and so brilliant. Thank you so much for being a fantastic guest on the Humorology podcast, Luke.
It's been a pleasure. It's been insightful, and thank you for having me. And yeah, all the love.
All the love humor. and all the laughter.
There you go.
Thanks, mate. Great.
Cheers.
The Humorology Podcast was hosted by Paul Barros. Produced by David Rose. Music by Steve Hayworth. Creative direction by Les Hughes. And additional research by Helen Sykes. Please remember to subscribe, like, and leave a review wherever you get your podcasts. This has been a Big Sky production.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.